Hello and welcome to episode 13 of RomPod. I am your host, Amanda McCall. Are you ready to share the love? The show notes for each episode at rompod.com contain links to this and other stories by our featured authors, all of whom have generously agreed to share their stories with us for free. Please support them in any way you can, like exploring more of their work. This week's story is a post-apocalyptic, supernatural gay romance by Kiara Cullen, titled Private Dancer. Our author this week started her academic life as a theatre major, but when she learned she couldn't act her way out of a paper bag, she turned to archaeology and other loves. She earned her degree at Indiana University, summered on digs in Greece and England, landed a gig in New Jersey, and eventually went into non-fiction publishing. Her third career is as a bureaucrat at a university. She is married to a photographer and has two cats. Eventually, she hopes to retire to a small cabin with the same husband and more cats. If you enjoy her tale today, you might consider some of her other stories, including The Shop Girl and the Vampire, which recently won the Burroughs Short Story at First Sight Award, or perhaps The Steamside Chronicles, or even further stories in the Mayan Epilogues series. You can purchase Kiara's work on Amazon, Smashwords, iTunes, Samhain Publishing, like her on Goodreads and Facebook, follow her on Twitter, check out her blog, kiaracullen.wordpress.com, and also her website, kiaracullen.com. You can find blurbs and story excerpts, occasionally contests, and also contact information. This week's tale is narrated by the wonderful Simon Hildebrandt. Simon is a web developer and has recently taken over the hosting chair of Protecting Project Pulp, one of the District of Wonders podcasts. If you're into fiction from the pulp magazines of the 1950s, make sure to head over and have a listen. So, without further ado, sit back, grab a glass of your favourite beverage, and enjoy.
Private Dancer by Kiara Cullen. Chapter 1. Private, get the hell away from the cenote. Cliff slung his rifle over his shoulder and pulled Private Huang from the precipice by gripping his torn shirt. Huang seemed like a 50-50 suicide risk. Before December of last year, he'd have sent him packing for a psych evaluation. The army didn't care about meltdowns now. Everyone who had survived was going through a meltdown of some kind. Cenote? What's down there? Huang pulled off his worn bandana and wiped sweat from his puffy eyes. The guy's been crying, or he's sick. Great. Professor Martin held out her hand, indicating he should join her under the meager shade of a sparse palm tree.
It's a sinkhole. The Yucatan is littered with them. They connect underground. The Mayans thought they were holy.
Maybe they were right about that, too. Because they sure as hell got the end of civilization down to the day.
You don't look good, Huang.
Cliff didn't have to elaborate. The statement was clear enough. Do you have a fever? Have any lesions surfaced? Would you like me to shoot you before the hell kicks in? He didn't want to lose Dustin Huang, despite the guy's complete ineptitude for jungle reconnaissance, if low scrub and dying palm trees counted as jungle. Huang was another kind of virus casualty. An emotional mess, probably better off dead than as miserable as he seemed to be. But something about the guy, besides his physical allure and despite his bad temperament, endeared him to everyone. Huang shook his head and joined Tam Martin, a civilian, and a handful of surviving soldiers under Cliff's withering command.
Can't I just be tired? Does the army have a regulation about that?
Shoot him, Tam Martin said with a wink and tapped Huang on the knee affectionately.
Citizen Martin, refrain from commenting on military matters.
Cliff felt foolish the second he finished speaking. Tamara Martin, their guide through the Mayan jungle and ruins, had lost her husband, her child, and nearly all of her archaeologist colleagues and friends. Technically, he was in charge of her ass too, but the woman could easily take care of herself without him. When his unit had stumbled upon her hacienda 20 miles north, she'd shot first and asked questions later.
Looters had razed most houses to the ground before fleeing north, away from one of the epicenters of disease. When she'd learned Cliff's unit was heading to the ancient ruins, she'd asked to join them. At first Cliff thought she'd be a nuisance, another mouth to feed, but when she described the ruins and her knowledge of legends of the Mayan apocalypse, he'd figured she might be useful. In truth, she just didn't want to be alone. He couldn't blame her. Solitude was a fast train to insanity.
Sorry, Tam. Sometimes I forget you're a civilian.
No need to remind her that since Mexico's government fell and the US annexed it under the umbrella of international martial law, she reported to him.
Martial law? He snickered. Even the word law had lost meaning. How many rules had he broken in the weeks since coming to Mexico? And who the hell cared anymore?
So, 15 or so miles to the caves. When we're within a mile, Private Huang will escort you home. Cliff turned away, regretting that he used the word home to her. He'd done so once before, only to see an empty stare that spoke volumes. What was home to a woman who'd cremated her daughter and husband on a mass funeral pyre with dozens of her friends and neighbors? Huang looked up with a smirk. That's how you're going to get rid of me? I know I'm not your top recruit, but hell. Anyway, she's a better shot than I am. Oh, you mean she's supposed to watch my back. Got it. She's not going anywhere, are you, Tam?
No, hardly.
Not his top recruit? That was an understatement. After the die-off, 4A meant that you were alive and not completely decrepit. Every able-bodied adult was pulled into a mission of some kind, whether rebuilding burned-out roads and hospitals, burying the dead, shift work in the DNA labs, replanting fields and building up livestock, caring for newly orphaned children, or tromping through one of the godforsaken corners of the earth deemed hotspots by the UN brainiacs. At least the co-presidents had managed some order, and Canadians and Americans were mostly fed, mostly clothed and housed, and mostly had some work to occupy their battered brains and souls. Some of Europe, Japan, and China had fared as well. Most other nations had blown themselves back into the Dark Ages. The world was broken. Everyone in it was broken. But for some reason Cliff didn't understand. It all went on, limping into the future on a faint whisper of hope. Faith, some had called it. Human resilience, according to others. A rumor had started a few days earlier that Australia and at least one part of Africa had rallied and established some semblance of order. Cliff didn't pay much attention to details outside of his immediate control. He glanced at Private Huang. Whatever civil servant had decided Dustin Huang should be drafted into the army was a moron. Dustin was about the worst shot Cliff had ever seen, his 12-year-old niece included. He not only lacked basic survival skills, he didn't seem to have even normal self-preservation instincts. He'd actually sat down on a snake and required an entire vial of precious antidote, cut his finger near to the bone with his own machete, and constantly had to be reminded to drink the purified water and take in only the ready-to-eats. A 24-year-old child, Cliff thought. A beautiful, odd child in an exquisite man's body. All Cliff knew of the guy was that his DNA was as sound as his fit, lithe body. At least, so far. Some had survived well into 2013, only to succumb in a more rapid progression of the virus. Cliff glanced at the rest of his unit, which included their scientific director, Ndoro, and now Professor Tam Martin. They were holding up. Not well, but holding up. Whether they knew what they did, that this fool's mission would likely kill more than one of them, if not all, they managed to keep it to themselves. They'd fought off a handful of Mexican looters and only lost two of their own. But in this brush, surely there were more who hadn't made it out of the Yucatan yet. Why couldn't I have drawn Bermuda or Greece? The Yucatan had nothing. They didn't grow a damn thing, and their pre-die-off currency had been tourism. 20 units had been combing the Yucatan parallel to cliffs, looking for the granddaddy of them all. The scientists had called it, one of the places where the virus supposedly began. However viruses began, Cliff thought with a shrug. They hadn't isolated the DNA marker for immunity, but government broadcasts claimed researchers were close. Still, for some reason they wanted the history, the earliest known victims. The places.
Tam told them why the UN had chosen the name calling on the very word for beginnings, but no one but Dustin Huang seemed to listen, to care. What did it matter? The scuttlebutt was that the most likely candidate as virus places were in Africa, the continent that had spawned other virulent diseases decades earlier. Still, the UN spread its forces thinly, and Mexico had seen a quick transmission and a sudden drop in its population from the east to the northwest. The government had fallen within weeks.
"Sergeant Cliff, can we have a word?" Cliff groaned at the quiet, island-accented English that nearly lulled him to a coma. "It's Sergeant Roman, or just Cliff." "Right." Dr. Ndoro, their scientific liaison, although a better shot than Private Huang, had yet to add anything to the mission except dull lectures about the proper protocols for collecting samples from human tissue. "Cliff, if I may be so bold, I do believe we passed another mass grave earlier, and you intentionally created a diversion to avoid stopping. We are to take samples along the way, are we not?"
"We can't take samples if we're dead now, Dr. Ndoro, can we?"
"Were we in real danger? It sounded like a small disturbance in the underbrush, maybe a wild pig?"
Cliff bit back a curse. "You're as stupid as a wild pig.
How about if you leave keeping us alive to me and collecting pieces of the dead to you? How would that be now? I won't mess with your vials and you won't mess with my tactics. Are we clear?"
Ndoro blew out a deep breath and smiled calmly.
"I understand that you're in charge, Cliff. Just don't forget what we're here to do."
"We understand one another well enough, don't you think?"
Asshole. Why did assholes like him survive? How the hell could I possibly share some DNA heritage with him?
Cliff felt the amused stare of Dustin Huang and glanced over to see him resting his head in Tam Martin's lap, peering over his sunglasses at the civilized argument. He whispered something to Tam that made her giggle. Cliff pointed to Dustin and called to him. "Huang, you're in charge of rations tonight. Get busy. We have another hour before dusk." Private Dalton shook her head and widened her eyes.
"Sarge, let me do it. He'll ruin it, and we're hungry."
"Yeah, fine. Whatever you say. I'm only in command." Dalton, like the others, doted on Huang. She exchanged a fist bump with him before turning to prepare the night's meal. She probably had a crush on him, too.
Two? Had this fantasy creature charm me?
Cliff glanced at Huang, wanting to punish him somehow for getting in, just a little. No one was allowed in, ever. Cliff tried to drain the tension from his arms by flexing his hands into fists and stretching his aching neck side to side. He found shade across the clearing from his unit, needing a moment's rest from hating everyone and everything. He closed his eyes and feigned sleep, listening to his men and women pulling dinner together and pitching tents. He did his best to block out his memories lest they make him as useless as Ndoro, Huang, and grief-stricken Tam Martin. But the memories wouldn't be denied. The harder he fought them, the more they came into focus.
"I'll be fine," Sam had said. "It's just a scratch."
"It's a scratch. It's not the death," he'd insisted. Cliff had brushed Sam's cheek with a kiss before pushing a knife into his chest, twice for good measure. The bed had filled with blood, and Cliff had walked out of their apartment without a backwards glance. Let someone else burn the greatest man he'd ever met. He wouldn't watch it.
"Have you ever been in love before me, Cliff?"
"No, Sam, never."
"I didn't know love before I met you. You were just waiting for me, Cliff, weren't you? Will you marry me, Sam? I know you may not be ready."
Cliff rolled over and thought about today's mistake. He'd seen the pucker in the bush. He simply didn't have the stomach for corpses today, even if they were Mexican and would look nothing like Sam. The pyres usually left a few corpses uncharred, the ones that rolled down the mound or animals had dragged away. They'd be bloated, with arms and legs covered in the crusty remains of death sores. Ndoro had caught him. He'd have to be more careful. And he'd have to be more careful around Dustin Huang. The guy was a mystery wrapped in an enigma, with a generous dollop of teas on top. Let the women fawn over him. Cliff just wanted to get back to base in one piece with as many of his unit intact. Life was too bizarre these days on its own, with little need for drama boys to complicate it further. Shield Jaguar pulled Lady Aok closer, knowing how she worried for him. In truth, he feared for his own sanity, as anger ruled his every thought since the lords of Xialba unleashed their wrath on his beloved mortal friends. Aok nudged Shield Jaguar's neck with her nose and pulled him closer.
"Please, husband, there can be no victory, whatever you would plan. You are but a great ruler. Do not anger them further."
"A once great ruler," he corrected. "I understand that, love. At times I wish that I could battle alongside the humans against the evil that besets them."
"We are eternally damned, husband. What the Dark Lords wrought upon the Small Ones need not concern us."
"No. They could have spared my champion and his child. I begged them. Imagine, I fell to my knees and pleaded like a child." But the Lords of the Underworld had laughed. Laughed. Now he grieved with the woman, Tamara Martin, for the man who had opened his tomb and proclaimed the greatness of Shield Jaguar's accomplishments to the modern world.
"Ah, Sinjin Twain, you are my friend. I am ashamed I could not save you and your children from the death."
Aok brushed a tear from his cheek. "I cannot see you suffer. You know the end of the cycle was upon us, and the Dark Lords of Zabala would rule again."
"There is hope. All mortals have not yet perished."
"No, you must face this truth. No sacrifice will appease them now. They have waited through the ages to reign unimpeded. It is their time. The cycle of light has ended. The Dark Lords will rise from the depths and walk the mortal realm, enslave the strong who have not yet perished."
Aok frowned, daring him to contradict the irrefutable truth she spoke.
"There is a way, but those who survive are as the dead already. No one is listening to the winds, to my calls. They know only terror and grief. It blocks their senses."
Shield Jaguar glanced at Aok, still lovely as the day he took her as his child bride. No longer a girl, but a wise woman who loved him profoundly. She did not share his concerns, and he should not continue to burden her. Perhaps she was correct. The time for light was truly passing into shadow. He gazed into the mortal realm at Tamara Martin, who huddled within a small group of warriors. "I could go to her, show myself once again."
Aok read his mind. "Husband, I plead with you. If you leave this realm, the Dark Lords will not let you return to eternal life. They have forbidden the interference of the God Kings."
She clutched his hand and pulled it to her cheek. "I cannot leave her. The mortals will perish."
Chapter 2. Dustin liked Tamara Martin. Liked her enough to wish they might remain friends once their pointless trek through the Mundo Maya, as she called it, came to a blessed end. Tam drew figures in the dirt with a long knife. Odd-looking cartoonish faces, dots and bubbles. Ancient glyphs, she'd called them. Describing what each meant, and which named the end of days, Mayan style.
"Sinjin, my husband, and our colleagues..."
She always broke off for a moment after saying his name, as if she were just getting reacquainted with the sound of the man she'd never see again, the feeling of pronouncing the word on her tongue.
"We talked endlessly about the silliness. Not a believer among us."
"Maybe it's a coincidence. How could they have known a new virus would emerge? I don't get how one can anyway. Hell, what do I know? I'm just a..."
Dustin rolled onto his stomach and pulled his cap down over his eyes.
"Just a..." Tam pulled the lip of his cap up.
"Spill, soldier."
"A non-scientist. Didn't even go to college."
"Shut up, Dustin. It's always a good idea to just shut the hell up."
"That's not at all what you were thinking, but I'll give you a pass. Who did you lose?"
"Who did I lose?"
Some of the losses that plagued him weren't close family members, but the near strangers who'd filled the Lower East Side. The bartender with the dreadlocks at his favourite dive. The cop who lived in his building and played opera too loud at all hours. The doorman. And of course, most of the company.
"A few cousins. Friends. That's it."
"Parents?"
"Not sure. They'd gone to China to visit relatives. I imagine one of them might be alive. DNA came from somewhere, right? Or maybe somewhere there's a mailman who looks like me."
"Your parents didn't get along?"
"Who knows? You don't know many Asian families, do you?"
"No, I guess I don't. Tell me about yours."
"Traditional, successful, driven. In an unspoken agreement. I am not gay, and I am not a disappointment because I didn't go to college, and then into the family business.
and I will someday produce many adorable offspring. Tam made a clucking sound of sympathy and repositioned her hat. What will you do when you're finished here? Where's home? It's usually New York. I believe my permanent address is now Fort Dix, New Jersey. Go ahead, ask. Why the hell would they draft me? Tam simply lifted a brow, and so he answered. I'm fit. I work out. Number one requirement for all these expeditions. She sniffed out a laugh. Yeah, we noticed you're fit. I think we all noticed. Tam nodded towards Private Dalton, who hadn't put in much effort to hide her stares at Dustin when he stripped down to his shorts to wash up. But not everyone in the unit is fit. They must have seen something else in you. I like Dalton. She makes a mean cup of instant coffee, and she's big enough to hide behind. That's rude. Tam's laugh belied her reprimand. She is pretty big. Anyway, we're all your admirers. Not everyone. Dustin winked and cast a quick glance at Sergeant Roman. He seems pretty ticked off at me right now. You do everything you can to tick him off. I'm not sure I get it, but I assume it's your form of a draft protest. I think you should cut him a break. This is his fourth or fifth mission since... Since. Everything is since. Nothing before that, nothing after this, just... since. Tam nodded and pried a broken bit of pottery from the ground. She snorted. See this? I used to care about things like this. A lot. I spent my adult life translating the glyphs on pottery. Dustin threw his arms around her and pulled her in, wishing he could find words to comfort her. But everyone had stopped pretending long ago. Were you good at it? The glyphs? Not the best ever, but good enough. Good enough for St. John Twain. And he was a perfectionist about all things Mayan. Tam pulled back to look deeply into Dustin's eyes. He spoke to the dead. Dead Mayan kings. They tell him where to dig. You believed him? Tam brushed away a tear as if it were an annoyance rather than the welling of emotion. Absolutely. I met one of them. Grief, then, and not too far from insanity. Who could blame her? Give her a rest, change the subject. He squeezed her shoulder and pointed to Cliff, who faked a nap several yards away. So, if you were me, and you wanted to get with that, how would you go about it? Because, as you said, all I'm doing is pissing him off. Cliff? Wait, is he available? He wears a ring. I assumed... Dustin laughed. I haven't been wrong yet. He let himself watch Cliff openly, for he lay on his side facing away from everyone. How old was he? 30, maybe, going on 100? Dustin liked to watch Cliff buzz his sandy blonde hair close and shave every day, as if their unit was going to be inspected. The guy was all muscles, the kind you got from working rather than pumping iron. But he could carry Dustin over one shoulder if need be. When Dustin had passed out from a snake bite, he'd done just that. He tried to recall what he'd said to Cliff in his delirious state, because what he could remember was inappropriate on a number of levels, including the fact that Cliff was his commanding officer. Well, I can look. Maybe if I get court-martialed I can spend my last evening with him or something. I don't think anyone has the energy to care what kind of soldier you are right now, including Cliff. Tam put her hand on his shoulder and squeezed a bit. Dustin, he's doing his best, you know? I don't think he believes we're going to find anything. And he takes keeping us alive very seriously. You might want to try a little harder. Dustin nodded. Tam was right. He'd been a bit of a prima donna these weeks, relying on humor and what he'd been told was a fairly handsome face to wiggle out of the tough jobs. It wasn't really fair to the rest of them, but it wasn't what Tam thought, or what Cliff probably thought. He winced inwardly. They thought he was lazy. He wasn't. He was simply incompetent at everything the army needed a grown man to do. He had zero mechanical aptitude, couldn't bear the sight of blood or the thought of killing another living creature, let alone a human. He'd barely scratched his way through high school biology, much to the chagrin of his parents. Tam could have said she'd found Mayan pottery in Egypt and he wouldn't have questioned it. I performed before the president, just days before the end, he announced to Tam, to himself. He wanted to help Dalton with the chores, ignoring Tam's questions as he walked away. I wasn't always nothing. After they'd eaten and most of them had turned in for the night, Dustin reached into his rucksack and pulled out the single can cooler.
He sat next to Cliff on a fallen log. Cliff inched away quickly, as if he'd been startled out of a waking dream.
Sarge?
Sarge? You've never called me Sarge.
Did you pick that up from a movie?
Cliff's baritone voice echoed through the still darkness, mixing with distant bird calls, the rustling of animals in the brush, and the song Tam Martin hummed from her tent. Dr. Ndoro had taught it to her, telling her it was an African lullaby, but Dustin was fairly sure it was an old Boys to Men song. It cracked him up every time she sang it. Nobody would suspect that Ndoro had a sense of humor, and Dustin liked him for it.
I have something for you, Cliff. It's a peace offering. Tam reminded me what a prick I've been.
Pretty much. Cliff still seemed on edge, and wouldn't look directly at Dustin.
That's a good sign. He's not neutral.
Dustin pulled the large can of Dos Equis beer and handed it to Cliff.
Stay thirsty, my friend, he said in a syrupy Spanish accent.
Cliff laughed, and Dustin realized he'd never heard the man laugh. It was a laugh that denied the death, denied their pointless mission, denied that the future was a calendar of empty boxes. It made Dustin nearly cry, that laugh. Who was Cliff, and what had he been before?
I'm not sure it's still good, but I found it at the last deserted cantina, and have tried really hard to keep it cool.
Cliff snorted and held the can to his cheek.
It's a little cooler than air temperature.
So you figure the army sergeant is a beer-drinking guy?
Pretty sure, yeah.
He is. He pulled open the tab and took a swig.
And you're the glass of fine wine kind of draughty.
Absolutely right.
So, is it good?
Yeah, it's good. Thanks, Private.
Cliff turned with a smile that almost reached his deep blue eyes. When Dustin met his gaze right on, Cliff froze. Time froze. Cliff leaned back an inch, and for a moment, so brief Dustin might have imagined it, ran his gaze down and back up the length of his body. He turned away and concentrated on his beer, his face a mask of army stoicism.
The Cliff that had woken for an instant was back in comatose sleep, and Dustin brushed his pants off and stood, sure the moment had passed, wondering if another would ever come. He turned towards his tent and took a step, and then stopped. He turned and Cliff looked up.
Good night, Private.
What was his name?
The mask didn't crack.
Good night, Private, Cliff repeated.
Chapter 3 We'll wait for you. The great wheel has stopped turning, and we have all the time to wait. The days quicken, and the darkness lengthens. And when you come, you will die. And with your labor, your blood, the land will grow again. Our people will dance, dance, dance. The maize will grow. You will heal the world with your blood. The short brown man with a grotesque mask pounded his feathered staff on the earth and howled at the sky. In answer, gems rained down, sparse at first, then hitting him in the face. They hit and bounced as if they were liquid, liquid emeralds, rubies, specks of gold. Cliff sat up in terror. His heart pounded at twice its normal speed. God, what a night. He'd tossed and turned for hours trying to get a two-minute conversation with Private Huang out of his mind, and when he'd finally drifted, he'd found himself in a horrifying fantasy world. And when you come, you will die. At least the jewels dropping from the sky made sense. He brushed the light rain from his face and moved a few feet so he wouldn't be so exposed to the hole in his tent. The rain would pass quickly, as it did every day. Unusual, though, for it to rain at night, he thought, and he shimmied to the tent flap to peek out. No one else stirred. Stevens was on watch, a black silhouette against a blacker night. Huang would relieve him before sunrise, unless he'd cajoled someone else to take his shift. They'd probably be better off with the frogs keeping guard. Huang might accidentally shoot himself. Cliff lay back and reached out past his sleeping bag to his gear. In the dark, he felt the cool metal of the empty beer can. Clutching it to his chest like a teddy bear, he rolled onto his side and cursed. His name was Sam, he whispered aloud. Shocked in the morning that Huang was actually awake with his rifle at his side, Cliff walked past him to the stream that ran near the cenote to try to splash himself into wakefulness. Huang didn't say a word when Cliff passed,
but dipped his head in a half-assed replacement for a salute. "I'm trying," Huang called after him.
"You got that right," Cliff called over his shoulder, picturing the smirk on Dustin's face. They were all trying, in both senses of the word.
"Get it done, Cliff," he said for the 100th time. "Get to one of the potential virus places, peek around, satisfy Andoro, and get the hell back to Jersey in one piece. So you can do it all over again, somewhere else, with another unit. Without Huang. Without Tam Martin. It would be different, less distracting, fewer reminders of a time in which connections weren't so pointless." Private Stevens joined Cliff at the stream, and he could predict the bit-back questions making the pudgy Yale graduate squirm. The heat and exertion had been damn hard on him. "How far today?"
"Just the 15 miles or so from Labna to the caves. We'll be there in a few hours."
"I'm kind of missing vehicles. Gas. Roads. Even without vehicles, why can't we take the roads again?" Cliff stared Stevens down. "You ever go to a carnival, Private? The ones where you can shoot at ducks moving along in a straight row?"
"Yeah, was it?
We'd be sitting ducks.
I thought when Mexico fell apart, everyone went to the States. Aren't they saying that might have started the spread of the virus? Who's left?"
"There's always someone left. A lunatic farmer who doesn't want anyone on his land. Someone too old to flee. A band of renegades looking for their next meal."
"It's bleak here, Stevens. Anyone left behind is likely willing to kill for a blanket and our ready-to-eats."
"I never thought I'd miss a jeep this badly."
"Be happy they sprung for the fuel to ship us in. Some units are doing hundreds of miles on foot. Get Tam to check out your feet, see how your blisters are making out. She's not a doctor, but she has a mother's touch, and it will make her feel good to help. We're breaking camp in under an hour."
"Yes, sir." Stevens lumbered away glumly, leaving Cliff thinking about what he really had to work with, and if anyone had thought these missions through. Andoro, despite his vile personality, was competent. Tam Martin wasn't a complainer and knew the area, a bonus. Huang and Stevens had been dead weight. The two other females, Dalton and Singer, top-notch. Two other new male draftees, average at best. And one seasoned regular army. Javier Hutero, his silent right hand, was supervising the others as they broke camp. His Spanish had come in damn handy, too. Within an hour they stood on the edge of the jungle, full of bad food and worse coffee, waiting for Cliff to guide them. When he pulled out his GPS, Tam looked at him and shut it down.
"This is my backyard, my playground, Sergeant. You want to stay off the highways, right?"
"For sure."
"Then we'll take the ancient highway, the one the Mayans built. The Sac B, the White Way. Most of the cities were linked by limestone roads, and you can pick them up pretty easily if you know what you're looking for."
"I do."
She brushed her hand through her golden hair and squinted as the sun rose behind Cliff. Cliff glanced at Javier, who shrugged.
"I'm Puerto Rican, man. I have no idea what she's talking about."
"Trust her." Dustin stepped forward and pulled his sunglasses down to stare at Cliff in the eyes.
"I don't distrust Tam.
What if she had flipped out and was making shit up? No one had briefed him on ancient roadways." He rubbed at the GPS in his hand. They had rations for a straight shot to the area, for a few days of scouring around, and to get back to meet-up point to be picked up and taken back to the coast. Dustin took another step towards Cliff.
"Trust her? Why wouldn't she know this area like the back of her hand?"
"It's okay, Dustin," Tam murmured. "I understand, Cliff. You have to play it by the book."
"How much time would it save?"
"We're only 15 miles or so out. So it depends on how fast you want to walk. It would just cut down on the brush, snakes, and rocks."
"Lead on."
Cliff pushed the GPS back into his pocket and lifted his backpack.
"Will this Sac B," she pronounced slowly,
"does it run by the caves? Our target is a little west of the Mayan ruins." Tam squatted and pulled out her penknife. She drew a pyramid in the dirt and a line gently curving towards the pyramid. On the left, she drew three circles with an X inside the largest. "This is the easiest entrance to the Lalton Caves, the tourist entrance." Andoro examined her map and gestured towards the X. "When we get here, I take over."
Cliff was ready to argue, but picked up a chuckle from Huang. "Endoro, if you want to go into a cave full of bats and batshit, I presume digging for viruses, you just help yourself. We'll be collecting dead bats, if we find them, as well as that batshit." "Spectacular. The sooner the better." Cliff indicated Tam should lead the way. He stayed close to her, and close on his ass was Dustin Huang, who typically trailed at the end of their unit. What was he up to? One thing he didn't expect was for Huang to break out in song. It surprised Cliff so much he stopped dead in his tracks and Huang ran into him. "What, I'm not allowed to sing either? Got something against music?" "No," Cliff wanted to say. "You have an incredible voice. I could listen to you for hours." God, when was the last time he'd heard anyone sing just for the joy of it? Joy? It couldn't be joy, it must be a habit. "Are you fucking kidding me, boy? Seriously? This isn't a damn Disney trek through a magical forest. I could try to find you a bullhorn if that would announce our presence a bit better. How would that be?" Dustin winced, and Cliff banged him on the forehead with his palm. "Think, Private. Just think a little bit. If that's at all possible." He turned away at the humor-laced hurt in Dustin's eyes. "He thinks he's stupid. Well, he is. No, Cliff, he's just not a fucking soldier. This isn't his fault. God damn this end." He squeezed Dustin's shoulder for a second to soften the blow. "Got it, Private? The idea is to stay alive, at least today." Nothing, not a smirk, not a smart reply. Well, good, Cliff thought. It's serious shit. "All right, everyone, keep it down." They hiked in silence, except for Stephen's incessant huffing and moaning. Tam pointed without comment to scattered Mayan ruins, bits of carved rock that would have gone unnoticed by the rest of them. "An archaeologist's eyes are always scanning the ground," she'd said to him. "And a soldier's are everywhere," he thought. "Private Huang, move in front of me, because God only knows what you'll do if I'm not watching." Javier was bringing up the rear, so that was about as good as it was going to get. He watched Dustin navigate the path, hopping over fallen building stones like a gazelle, his muscles like springs. He stood straighter than any marine, though his posture wasn't forced, but fluid and natural as the surrounding jungle. He's like a fucking Asian elf or something, Cliff thought, and it hit him. Dustin Huang was a dancer. It explained his posture, his grace, his lean body, his way of not fitting in with everyone else. My God, how long has it been since he's associated with regular guys? "You live in New York, Private? Or L.A.?" Dustin didn't turn around. "Why do you ask, Cliff?" Cliff, the way he'd said it was a challenge. And it sounded too good to reprimand him. "Just a hunch." "Thinking of coming to visit when this is all over?" Dustin turned over his shoulder and winked, his dimples springing to life. "I don't know whether to reprimand you for insubordination or for being a really annoying..." "An annoying what?" His face grew serious, and Cliff simply shook his head. "Flirt. For being an annoying flirt. It's going to make me crazy before we get out of here, if we get out of here." A whistling sound right past his ear made him drop to the ground, pulling Dustin down by his backpack. "Incoming!" The rest fell like dominoes behind him. Cliff peered through the side of his rifle in all directions, but couldn't find the shooter. Javier shimmied along the path until he was next to Cliff. "Sergeant, what the hell is it?" Javier held his gaze. "That wasn't a gun." Cliff propped up on one of his elbows. "Not a gun?" "No, Javier was right. It had a thrum sound." Dustin pulled at Cliff's sleeve, and he shrugged him off. "Not now, Huang." "Then you're not interested in that arrow? Looks like it was a few inches from catching you in the neck." He pointed at a colorful shaft, trailing long strands of bird plumes. "God almighty, they're shooting at us with bows and arrows?" Huang acted so quickly that Cliff didn't have time to say a word. He sprang up, pulled the arrow from the tree, and dropped back down on his belly next to Cliff. "Private, do you have a death wish?" "Somebody had to do it, right? I'm the fastest you have. Come on, you love to dish out points for stupidity. How about a few for bravery?" "What the hell kind of arrow is that?" Javier examined the point, which was hand-chipped from stone and knocked to the shaft with sinew. "We got the Flintstones after us?" "Javier, take this to Tam. get everyone down into that gully, backs against the embankment. Moments later, they huddled, backs against the slope, sheltered from the open Sac B. Tamara Martin frowned as she examined the arrow. She handed it over to Cliff with a shrug. Someone took an ancient arrowhead, sharpened it up, and shot at us with it. My expertise doesn't go further than that. Why? Maybe it's all they had, Dalton suggested. Beats throwing rocks. Well, I hope like hell they don't have any more of them. It may be primitive, but it's lethal enough. And it nearly got me. Javier shimmied up to the lip of the road and surveyed the area. Nothing, he called over his shoulder. Tan leaned against Huang, resting her head on his shoulder and staring at Cliff. What? Spit it out, Tam. I got nothing here. The feathers are Quetzal, the bird most sacred to the ancient Maya. It's a nice bit of workmanship. So the ancient natives are after us? The real Mayan Flintstones? They were hardly a primitive culture. Surely you've seen enough recently about their achievements, predictions, knowledge of astronomy and mathematics. They're dead, and their descendants are probably all gone from the death. When you come, we will kill you. Dustin rolled his eyes and cleared his throat. I think maybe one of them survived, Cliff. I mean, seriously, no one picked this up in one of the hotel gift shops. Cliff tried to stare Dustin into silence, but his return stare dared him to try. Damn him. Am I going to get a cheap thrill every time he says my name or goads me? Pull it together. Andoro tapped at his watch. Sergeant, we're on a schedule. What do you propose we do now? Here's an idea, Doctor. You run on ahead and let us know if the coast is clear. How would that be? Because I wouldn't want to fucking interfere with your schedule. It's your schedule, too. Send the gazelle there, indicated Dustin. I think he could probably dance between the arrows. Huang looked shaken, and Cliff was ready to reassure him that he'd be the last to be sent ahead, but Dustin was staring at Andoro curiously. You've seen me? His gaze darted around the unit. Andoro nodded. I remember you, Private. Not all of us are uncultured. It wasn't so long ago. You were stunning. Tam patted Dustin's knee. What's he talking about? Dustin shook her off and moved away, looking for nothing in his backpack, closing the conversation. Andoro shook his head and whispered, as though Huang wasn't within hearing distance. Why is he ashamed? Drop it, Doctor, Huang hissed over his shoulder. Cliff hadn't heard that threatening tone from Huang before, laced with bitterness, bite, and backbone. Perhaps it was a front, this boy-child act. He made a note to have a private word with Andoro once they were safe, to learn what had turned Dustin Huang pale and made his blood boil. He held out a hand to silence everyone, needing a moment to gather himself, to flip through his mental file folder to find the next most appropriate move. He didn't expect to feel Dustin's hand on his knee, see Dustin's dark eyes so close to his. He squatted in front of him, balancing the weight of his pack by leaning into Cliff. He narrowed his already narrow eyes to mere slits. I'm going. Andoro's right. I can't leap over bullets, but I'm the fastest you have. I'm the most expendable. I'm likely to get killed accidentally anyway, sit on another snake or something. It's not a fucking movie, Dustin. Crap, why did I use his name? No shit, Sergeant. Look, we've all died a few times over already. What's the big deal? I'm the right choice. I'll need one of those, whatever, walkie-talkie things to let you know that it's clear, or whatever I'm supposed to say. He was already dropping his backpack and stripping off his shirt, down to a green sleeveless tee. Stop it, Dustin. But Dustin grabbed a handful of mud and smeared his arms and face to a slimy brown green, covering his raven-black hair with his cap and shouldering his rifle. Right? I got this. Now, give me one of those radios. Javier leaned over and handed his radio to Huang. I can go instead, Sergeant. Cliff's gut churned as he realized Huang had a point. It wouldn't do to lose Javier, the only person who could lead the unit to safety if Cliff himself was killed. Jesus help me. Look, Private, if you get into trouble, we won't be there. Aren't we supposed to synchronize our watches or something? I get to the ruins, I call. You don't hear from me in, what, an hour and a half? You turn back or proceed with extreme caution or whatever. It's probably just one crazed dude with a single arrow. Check in halfway. Cliff had so much more to say, including thank you, but Dustin squatted again and pressed his lips quickly to Cliff's cheek with a wink. For luck. And in case I don't make it back. Now you'll remember me, the asshole who had the balls to kiss his commanding officer in front of everyone. In a moment, he disappeared into the brush next to the sack B. Cliff's heart fell. "You're not expendable." He resisted the burning temptation to touch his cheek where Dustin had kissed him. Tam Martin sidled over to Cliff and put a hand on his forearm. "Are you okay? Are you sure about this?" Cliff shook her off, adjusted the volume on his walkie-talkie, glanced at his watch, and pulled his cap over his face. Javier took over, reminding them to stay down and remain quiet. "Did you see him take off?" he whispered to Cliff. "He looked like something out of the Jungle Book." Cliff glanced at his watch. A minute had passed. A minute since he'd made an error in judgment that might cost a life. Chapter 4. Aok stared at Shield Jaguar's back, unable, unwilling to listen further. "My love is not enough for you." He turned and she saw his anguish, but wasn't moved by his pain. "Your love is enough for eternity." "Then why do you abandon eternity? The lords have spoken. You must not interfere with the mortals. You will become as one of them. I will lose you forever." "I have spoken with my father, Spear Jaguar, with the kings of all the realms. Realms you have not heard of, wife. Ones far across the waters, where mortals also struggle. There are no immortal kings but those who worship our sun. You would lie to me, husband, to abandon yourself, to absolve yourself of the hurt you inflict? You double your injury." "It is the truth. We, all the kings, believe that the Dark Ones have forbidden what they do not control. They did not stop me from manifesting on the mortal plane before. They cannot now." "Zabalba was closed. They did not have the power they now wield. They have scorched the land. No one tends the corn. No one worships us. They are with the Dark Lords. Dead. Dead forever. And when the wheel of time stops turning, you also will die with them." "I cannot leave the mortals. There is a chance, but only if I show them the way." "There is no chance. There is no way. There is only darkness." Aok swept aside the feather curtain of their temple dwelling and ran into the darkness. "How can I plead for him? How could he put the frail ones before me? He has forgotten his love for me." She heard him call after her. "You said you loved my generosity. You loved my..." But she ran too far to hear more. She would run until she could run no more, and the Dark Lords could take her for all she cared. Aok would not spend eternity without Shield Jaguar. Dustin allowed himself a few jetés over fallen trees and brush. It felt freeing to be alone, running, leaping, filling his lungs with humid hot air, to feel sweat trickling down his neck. Besides the high likelihood he might not make it back to New York alive, the worst part of being drafted was that you were never alone, especially since the death, the real soldiers had assured him. When the recruits were crammed into spacemen for half their numbers, when you couldn't shower in privacy or eat alone, or sleep without some slob snoring in the bunk next to you. But even worse, he felt like a caged leopard. He hadn't moved, really felt his muscles strain and stretch, for months. Sometimes at night he thought he'd crawl out of his skin, the urge to spin, leap, throw his arms out, turn to lightning in his veins. For most of the recruits, hiking was a dreadful chore. He wanted to scream, "Let's run!" The music of nature was erratic, not the gentle rhythms of a classical ballet or a contemporary beat. He hummed as his only accompaniment, and stopped after a few minutes to weep at a loss he didn't know he carried. The world had stopped caring about dance, music, theatre, art. They couldn't care, didn't have any caring left, which meant no one would care to see him fly again. And he'd lived for the thrill of an audience, of sending his emotions soaring into the crowds since he was a kid. Under the new martial laws, people couldn't even assemble in groups as large as his last audience. Dr. Enduro claimed to know him, might understand as well as a scientist could. Enduro's currency had risen with disaster. The world valued doctors, researchers, strategists, and soldiers. Is that why he'd volunteered to go on ahead? To show them that he could do something of value? No, to show Cliff? When had a minor crush turned into longing? Cliff wasn't his type, he thought. Not at all.
beer-drinking, sports-watching, regular Joe. Maybe it's gotten so bad since the death that I just want a guy to take care of me, to care for me. That's horrible. He'd never wanted anything but an equal partnership before. No, Cliff might be easy to flirt with, but he was wound up pretty tight. Hurt. Like a dog that had been kicked too often and would never trust again. Dustin had heard that after 9/11, marriage and divorce rates both rose as people settled on what was important to them. After the death, people no longer knew what was important. They waited in shock for someone to tell them. Someone like Cliff, who marched forward, his inner life locked away behind rules and agendas. Dustin wondered who Cliff looked to for guidance. Dustin wiped his forehead and glanced at his watch. He resumed his run at a slower pace, reminding himself it might be a damn good idea to do what he was supposed to do. People were actually counting on him to get to the caves and see if it was safe. He glanced around for any sign of humanity, but aside from empty sunscreen tubes and beer bottles, remnants of pre-death tour groups no doubt, it looked as if no one had walked along the Sac B since the ancients. Until an hour into his run. Facing him at maybe 100 yards, a man stood in the middle of the ancient path. He looked like he belonged there, like he owned this jungle, although he certainly wasn't a local. American or British? He wore a hat, long-sleeved white shirt, and khakis that made him look like Indiana Jones. A huge machete hung from his belt. As Dustin slowed to a walk and bridged some of the distance between them warily, he saw that the man was probably around 40. Handsome, tan, and somewhat weathered like he worked in the sun. Dustin stopped cold. And so did the stranger, who held up his hands in a gesture that said he wasn't armed as he slowly closed the rest of the distance. God, it would help to actually have some training right now. The guy didn't look like an enemy, but he had a few inches and a few dozen pounds on him. If he chose to fight, Dustin would lose. No closer. Dustin reached for his rifle, and the man smirked a bit as he held his empty hands out again. No problem. What are you doing here? Hell, he didn't know how to sound like he controlled the situation. He didn't even know what the situation was. I live here. He gestured to tops of the high ruins peeking out of the trees in the distance. Here? You live in the jungle or at the ancient site? It doesn't matter. Private, I think you should turn back. Tell your unit that it's not safe. Tell them anything you like. But don't let them go to the caves. What the fuck? Who the hell are you? Tell her. Tell her that Xibalba is open. He poked at the brim of his hat, and Dustin saw the strain in his eyes. The guy was crazy. Perhaps the death was on him, although this was an odd presentation. Her? It hit Dustin like a name on a breeze that wasn't even blowing. Tam. He means Tam. Tell them all. He pressed his thumb and fingers to his forehead as if to shield his eyes from the sun. They must fight the death, but not one another. That is their plan, to let mortals become enslaved by their own frailties. Do you hear me? Dustin stared, wondering if instead of threatening the guy he should be helping him. What the hell would Cliff do? I will. I'll tell them. What's your name, so I can tell them what you said? Good, Dustin, you're doing fine. Shield Jaguar. My name is Shield Jaguar. Right. Look, why don't you have a seat in the shade, and I'll call them right now? Dustin pulled out the walkie-talkie. And you can tell them yourself. The nutjob nodded, but didn't move. Dustin looked down to pull out his walkie-talkie and adjusted the volume and frequency. It was past time to call in anyway. Cliff had said halfway, he remembered ruefully. A glint of sunlight made him look up, and where the crazy dude had stood, nothing. Not even Dustin could move that fast. His heart pounded furiously. Now who was insane? A sting in his thigh turned to a burn. What now? Another snake bite? He reached down and froze at the sight of a feathered arrow sticking from his thigh. Blood soaked his pant leg, and as the burning turned to searing agony, he fell to his knees. His vision clouded, and fairly certain he would pass out, as he typically did when he was in great pain, he scrambled along the ground to reach the walkie-talkie. He broke into a sweat as his leg went numb. The numbness climbed up his torso and his right arm tingled. Shit, I've been poisoned? Dustin wiped tears and sweat from his eyes with his left arm and clutched at the walkie-talkie. Cliff, come in. He pressed on the side again. Please, Cliff, come in.
Private, you're late.
Don't come. Don't come, Cliff. It's not okay. A guy said his name was Jaguar or something. Please leave.
Before he passed out, he felt himself being dragged from the path like a corpse by strong arms. He looked up into the face of the man. What was his name? Something Jaguar.
Cliff shook Javier off his arm, irrationally wanting to punch him. I'm going.
Javier threw up his hands in frustration.
And what, walk into a trap with the kid? He said not to come. We both heard it. That's why he went on ahead. It worked. You're going to make his sacrifice count for nothing, man? We're not going.
Enduro chose the worst moment to approach them, his brows furrowed in annoyance.
This is taking a long time, Sergeant. We should be there already, collecting samples.
Cliff sent a warning glance to Javier, daring him to talk about Dustin.
Private Huang hasn't checked in yet, Doctor. I'm sure he will when he gets to the site. I'm going to go on ahead and do a second sweep.
You? Why not send one of your men or women?
Shit.
It was a mistake. It was a terrible mistake. And insane at times, he'd be brought up on charges for dereliction of duty.
But he couldn't leave Dustin alone. He'd been the biggest fool for letting him go, and now he had to try to undo his mistake before... It didn't bear thinking about.
Dustin had sounded odd, not just hurt or tired, but confused, panicked, though his warning had been clear enough.
I'm going. You're in charge, Javier.
What's going on, Cliff? Enduro asked.
I have the right to know. I am your scientific liaison. If anything has gone wrong with this mission...
It's all gone wrong, Doctor. Don't you get it? What about the arrow coming within an inch of my head made it seem like this mission was going well? Private Huang is hurt, and I have to bring him back. You do what Javier says, and if you don't, he'll hogtie you to a fucking tree and let the bugs eat you. I won't complain if he gags you and kicks you in the balls as well. Is that clear enough for you?
Javier groaned and pulled Cliff aside.
Let me go. Let me go, Cliff. Don't leave me with these fools.
He winked, but Cliff saw his terror.
I'm not losing two of you.
Take me with you, then. It's just a freaking loco local frightened of the strangers. The world's gone nuts. This isn't anything new. We can take out a few crazies together, pick up Huang, and get back to the coast. I'll back you up.
I am not losing another person. Now shut up and keep your eye on them all. They're going to get scared when I'm gone. Don't let Enduro make it worse with his batshit mission talk, okay? By the time we get home, they'll have the vaccine anyway. This is such a fucking waste of time.
Javier rubbed his face and then clutched at his temples.
What do I tell them if you don't return?
Tell them whatever you want. I don't give a damn. I'm not losing him. I can't lose one more goddamn thing.
Cliff shouldered his rifle as Tam stepped out from behind Javier, seemingly from nowhere.
How much had she heard? Damn it.
There's no time, Dr. Martin. I have to take off, but I'll be back shortly.
Despite her tan, she looked pale and wore tired like it was a cloak she'd never be able to take off.
Please don't let her be sick.
Can I come with you? I know the way.
He shook his head and saw that she knew his answer in advance.
Dustin,
I'll bring him back. I know you two became friends.
My God, Cliff, don't make promises you can't keep to a woman who's already lost it all.
That's not what I was going to say. Yes, bring him back. You should know, in case... I don't know. He thought you were pretty special. Very special. Drool-worthy, I think he called you. That's all.
Cliff's blood turned to ice. Tam thought Dustin was dead, and she wanted him to know that there might have been something... Something Cliff had been pushing away since the day he met him. And now it was probably too late.
Anything I need to know about the site? About the SAC-B?
Tam shrugged with exhaustion.
Just that you're going to the place the Mayans thought was the entrance to hell. Maybe there was a reason after all. We never believed it, Sinjin and me. Some modern Mayans still revere the place they called Xibalba.
I'm sure those folks are long gone.
Dustin said he met someone who called himself Jaguar. That sounds like a local nutcase, probably the guy with the arrows.
Jaguar?
Tam brushed a tear from her cheek, and Cliff cursed silently. He didn't want to leave her in this state, but every minute counted. Cliff turned, but she caught him and spun him around. Cliff, promise me that if you meet a man named Jaguar, you'll listen to him. He will call himself Spear Jaguar or Shield Jaguar. Tell him you are friends with St. John Twain and Tamara Martin. The ones who found his tomb. Promise. Promise me. Yes, of course, Tam. Cliff caught Javier's eye and sent a plea for him to care for Tam. God, what this world had done to good people. Chapter 5. Shield Jaguar watched over the young mortal with great curiosity. He hadn't carried himself like a warrior, yet he had been brave in the face of terror, choosing to warn his comrades instead of pleading for rescue. Now he would heal as an immortal, for Shield Jaguar had breathed into him, imbuing him with the magic that only the ancient kings could bestow. The mortal minions serving the Dark Lords paled in strength to Shield Jaguar. Their poison arrows were as mosquito bites, their rituals as potent as a butterfly against him and those he favored. He pulled the arrow from the soldier's leg and closed the wound with a touch of his palm. No, the servants of the Dark Lord had failed this time. The disease they'd spread through the universe, however, that had been effective. Nothing would stop the death now. Mortals either succumbed, or they survived, but the damage was done. Chaos ruled over all kingdoms. Chaos would bring them to their knees as they fought for resources. Oil, food, water. Mortals did not have the courage or spirit to form a single alliance to fight the real darkness, their dark hearts. Shield Jaguar had learned that lesson in life as he had warred with his own Mayan brothers. He knew that those who didn't die of the death would die at the hands of one another. While the minions were weak, the Dark Lords themselves, that was a different matter altogether. If, when they learnt Shield Jaguar had assumed mortal form to warn men away from Zabalba, the torture would be extreme, endless, and unfathomable. They needn't bother with him, for the separation from Lady Aok, even for these few mortal days, was torture enough to wound his heart into silence. He pushed thoughts of Aok down. His choice had been irrevocable. The young man stirred. Shield Jaguar closed his eyes and assumed the likeness of his champion, St. John Twain, the archaeologist who uncovered his tomb and proclaimed his greatness to the mortal world. No sense in scaring the young man with his animal image. Besides, it was difficult to carry on a conversation as a jaguar. Shield Jaguar hoped the one called Huang had the heart of a jaguar, the strength of one. The burden of saving his kind would fall on his shoulders.
Cliff?
No, not Cliff. Huang blinked a few times and shielded his eyes from the blazing rays of the sun. Shield Jaguar helped him crawl further into the shade and propped him up with his strong shoulder. The young soldier let out a deep sigh and leaned back.
Am I a prisoner or something?
Shield Jaguar shook his head. No, son, you are a free man.
Do you have water?
Shield Jaguar saw that he remembered his leg wound with a start and forgot his request for water.
I was shot, I'm sure. What happened to me?
His narrow eyes rounded wide, and he inched away from Shield Jaguar.
I healed you. You will have a scar, but the pain should have ceased. Has it not?
He nodded and rubbed at his torn fatigues.
I'm confused. You said you healed me?
Your love will be here within minutes.
My love? I don't understand.
Huang rubbed at his parched lips and looked up in awareness.
You mean Cliff? We're not...
Within minutes, Shield Jaguar reached into his knapsack, pulled out a metal flask of water he blessed with a thought. Drink. You will need your strength.
I told him not to come.
A hero does not abandon loved ones. Shield Jaguar covered his eyes, unwilling for the mortal to see his shame. A hero does not abandon his wife. Dustin's heart lurched at the sight of Cliff, jogging at a steady pace towards them, then stopping cold a few yards away. He looked relieved, confused, bone-tired, and a little afraid. And all of these emotions he cloaked immediately with the face of a stoic leader.
How does he do that? As Cliff pulled his rifle from his shoulder, Dustin pushed to his feet and held up his hand.
No, Sarge, he's okay. I mean, as much as I can say anyone is okay, he helped me.
Step aside, Private. You, stand up slowly, hands out. When you're up, put your hands behind your head. No quick moves.
As you wish, Sarge.
The stranger did as he was told, with a smile and a humour lighting his eyes. He shot Dustin a quick look of amusement.
Does he have a weapon, Private?
No, he's not armed. He's some kind of a healer or something. He calls himself Jaguar.
The stranger snickered. Almost. Shield Jaguar.
He watched Cliff for a reaction and nodded when he saw one.
And you have heard of me.
Dustin wanted to scream to cut the tension from the air.
Cliff, damn it, what are you doing here? I told you to stay back. Someone shot me in the leg. It's not safe.
You don't look wounded.
You look damn good.
Dustin drew in a quick breath. Had he imagined it? Had Cliff said it aloud? Or was he losing it in the heat?
Cliff pointed to the stranger. Tamara Martin said she knew you. I thought she was hallucinating or something.
I know Dr. Martin. I once saved her life. I wish I could have saved my champion, her husband, from the death, and their child.
St. John Twain. How do you know him? Worked with him?
Dustin shook his head.
Didn't matter how much the guy looked like Indiana Jones, he was no simple archaeologist.
Yes, he served me. He served me well. I still mourn his passing, for he cannot join the gods, and I will not see him again. I have assumed his likeness.
He swept his hands down his torso as if he expected applause.
Dustin, do you know what the hell this guy is talking about?
Not a clue. But please, put the gun down. He's harmless, at least in the way that you're thinking.
Cliff shouldered his gun and moved towards them. Dustin felt a shove in his lower back and fell forward a foot. Shield Jaguar leaned towards him and whispered in his ear, smelling of burnt wood and spices, sweet honey and coffee. No, chocolate. He couldn't unravel the otherworldly feeling of the man's hand on his back, but the words were clear enough.
He has come all this way alone, marching into the unknown, for you. Can you not see that? Will you not thank him, embrace him?
Something broke deep within Dustin, something he didn't know he held tightly.
Need.
He took a few hesitant steps and then quickly crossed the distance to Cliff, who held out his arm and pulled him into his embrace.
God, when was the last time an embrace felt like a home, like a shelter from storms, and future dangers, and self-doubt?
Dustin wouldn't let go, and Cliff didn't push him away. Their gazes locked, and a chill ran through Dustin's body, the chill of awareness that his emotions had been recognized.
Why did you come? I begged you to stay back.
Cliff broke away and shook his head. It wasn't a choice. They'll have my hide. Well, they can have it. He looked back into Dustin's eyes and took in a deep breath. I thought you were dead, or dying. The veil fell back over his face and he stepped back a bit more.
This isn't the place, and it sure as hell isn't the time, Dustin.
Ah, Shield Jaguar approached them. Cliff, I hope you will not think me intrusive. My wife, the Lady Aok, told me many times that I am a hopeless matchmaker. Perhaps I have overstepped by pushing some of my breath of truth into the air. But your mortal lives are short. I see you are wounded men, and this death has hurt each of you in a different way. Do not hope to escape my pastime. If you are meant to be as one, it will happen before you leave me.
Dustin felt the pull to reach out again, to feel that embrace, to smell the mix of soap and clean sweat and dust on Cliff's skin, to feel his half-shaven chin against his cheek. He held out his hand, but Cliff ignored it.
This is too fast. I'm falling in love. It's not possible.
Cliff jumped and stared at Dustin.
What did you say?
Nothing.
Pardon. Shield Jaguar bowed. I have an effect on mortals. They sometimes hear what they should not hear, or would rather not hear. You will find a way to cope.
He waved his hand dismissively, now behaving not at all like the archaeologist whose form he possessed.
Mortals? Cliff blew out a deep breath and took a swig from his canteen. Mr. Jaguar, you don't display the typical signs of H8N4. But we're not buying this act, or whatever it is. Dustin and I have a job to do, and I have to insist that you return to your home or wherever you feel safest.
And if I refuse?
I have a few options under international martial law. You won't like any of them.
Cliff motioned for Dustin to join him privately, leading him several yards away from the stranger. Dustin resisted an overpowering urge to cling to Cliff, to beg him to abandon the mission and to go... Where would they go? To an island, surrounded by turquoise water and isolated from the madness? Any place where they could pretend life was normal, and they were just a couple of guys who'd found some relief in one another's company.
Huang, are you okay?
He's not kidding, Cliff. I was shot, I swear. See the tear? Dustin poked his finger through the slit in his pants leg. It did something to heal me. I feel different. I can't put my finger on it.
I think he's a con artist. He was probably responsible for the arrow in the first place. Maybe has a few buddies out there.
Look, do we agree he's unstable? It could be that the death got the better of him. He claims to know Tam's husband and Tam. Maybe he lost everyone too.
Two?
What was his name, Cliff?
Like Tam did, like everyone. Maybe he's just unbalanced. We have to lose him and get on with the mission. Understand?
Dustin's heart sped as Cliff leaned in to whisper into his ear. The heat, Cliff's scent, his closeness. Why were they suddenly so intolerable, so insistent?
What the hell, Cliff?
Dustin pulled away and took a deep breath to clear his head. Cliff's hand practically burnt a patch on his bare shoulder, and Dustin swung around to face him, gaze to gaze.
Don't touch me again.
His face fell, the mask of command locking into place.
I'm sorry. I didn't. I'm sorry.
Dustin's cheek heated as he choked back tears.
Please, God, don't let me cry. Shit.
Don't be sorry. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm just a little tender or something right now. Shit, I don't belong here.
I know you don't. Don't you think I fucking know you don't belong here? Don't you think I would carry you on my shoulders back to whatever magical kingdom you lived in before the death if I could?
I'm doing everything I can to get you back there alive, Dustin. You make everything so difficult.
The magical kingdom.
Funny. Dustin dropped to a squat and let the tears fall, not caring any more who saw. My last role was in a magical kingdom. It was a stretch. I'm not that tall and I'm Asian. But I got the lead anyway. I had the goddamn lead.
What?
Ballet. I'm a ballet dancer. I was. Go ahead, laugh it up. Want to see me do something? No, didn't think so. No one does. Don't look at me like that, I'm not crazy. Hell, maybe I am.
Cliff squatted and lifted Dustin's chin. His blue eyes looked misty, windows into a hazy whirl of emotions.
Look at me.
Leave me alone.
Look at me, Huang.
I would love to see you dance.
I don't know much about that stuff, but I would love to see it.
Why the hell are you so ashamed of who you are? You are a star, for God's sake. I'm just a disposable chess piece.
You're a good leader.
Cliff closed his eyes and sighed.
Then why is my unit miles back there?
Because I put you before all of them.
No, I put me before them. That's a very, very bad kind of leadership.
I'm the military screw-up. I never intended to make you screw-up, too.
He came for me. I don't know whether to feel guilty or happy.
Dustin, none of us meant for any of this to happen. Don't you get it? This was the big one. The game changer. We're survivors. We're all doing our best. Who knows, maybe someday you'll be on stage again, and I'll get to watch you dance.
Dustin brushed at his tears and did everything he could to pull himself together.
And after, you'll take me to a very expensive restaurant and then back to an upscale hotel?
Cliff laughed, stood, and held out his hand to help him to his feet.
How about a burger and a beer?
You make me feel so cheap.
Yeah, that would do.
It's a deal. Cliff reached out to Dustin's cheek and brushed a bit of dirt away.
Dustin reached up quickly and pressed Cliff's palm against his skin.
Neither the time nor the place, Private. Rain check.
I can live with that.
Shield Jaguar cleared his throat, and they turned to him.
This is a somewhat feeble start, but has merit as both honest and honorable. I believe you are both well suited to this task. Cliff approached the stranger and pointed his finger again in a way Dustin knew well. Look, aren't you the one who said we should turn back? Well, that had better be the only task you're talking about, because that's what we're doing. No. Now that you are here, I see a path towards weakening the Dark Lords. Shit, you speak English, but I don't understand a word of it. Cliff put his hand on his rifle and moved until he stood over Shield Jaguar. I have an idea. The three of us are going to move off this cursed Sack B and have a nice little chat. How would that be? You get a chance to tell your little story. If it makes sense, and it won't, we'll do what you advise. When it doesn't make sense, we'll part ways. Or, if you prefer, you can join our unit to the east. You have 5 minutes to tell us what the fuck you're talking about. Got it? Dustin scuffed at the dirt with his boot, feeling bad for the guy who healed him, knowing, nevertheless, Cliff was doing the right thing. That is acceptable. I would ask that after I show you my true nature, you show Shield Jaguar the respect his legacy deserves. For one, that, he pointed to the ruins, peeking over the tree line, was my kingdom. You are on my land, and it is by my mercy that you still live and breathe. And that is what the fuck I'm talking about. Got it? He took off his fedora and threw it to Dustin in a dramatic flourish. In the next second, a sleek black jaguar lay in the spot formerly occupied by the would-be archaeologist. Holy shit. Holy shit, Cliff! Cliff already had his rifle aimed at the beast, who languidly groomed one paw. Don't shoot him, he's a freaking devil. No, he's magic, or magical or something. My god, he's a real-life were-something. Were-jaguar Mayan god-something. The man was back in an instant, at his full height, arm extended to receive his hat. Were-jaguar Mayan god-something is quite accurate. I am Shield Jaguar, the mightiest ruler of this world, save my father, Spear Jaguar. I would now like those 5 minutes you offered. Cliff's hands shook as he put the safety on his rifle. I guess it finally all got to me. Shield Jaguar chuckled. You're not insane, warrior. You will get used to the idea. It generally takes mortals a few days. Try to relax. You are a very tense person. I've been meaning to tell him that too. Dustin plopped onto the dust, all his nerve endings singing with adrenaline. I'd really like not to faint again. Aok brushed tears from her eyes so she could better see the mortal plane and the woman who writhed in agony on the jungle floor. Tamara Martin, a lovely creature, a lonely creature like Aok herself. They had both lost their husbands. And now Tamara Martin would die in agony of the death, one of those rare mortals in which the disease's progression was greatly delayed. Aok hoped that the warriors in her company would have the sense to put her out of her misery. She could suffer excruciating pain for days. Aok's own pain from her husband's betrayal was softened a bit as she mourned for Professor Martin. She'd come to have a tender spot for those mortals who had proclaimed the greatness of Shield Jaguar and his father, Spear Jaguar. She glanced at her beloved in the form of St. John Twain, Tamara's dead husband. He reasoned with two other mortals. How could his love of these frail ones outweigh his devotion to his wife? How could he have sacrificed his immortality for a remote chance of helping them? Again, Tamara Martin cried out in pain and hugged her stomach. Soon her breath would become labored as her lungs would fill with her own blood. Aok's heart broke anew. Perhaps she understood, just a little, what had moved Shield Jaguar. An idea took form, and she looked within to see which would win the great battle between her own fear and courage. Chapter 6 Cliff's nerves had calmed a trifle by nightfall. The walkie-talkie had died, and he suspected Shield Jaguar had something to do with that. He hoped Javier had the sense to start the unit's movement back to the meeting point. No doubt he'd have his hands full arguing with Ndoro, who would insist they press on. They sat in a hut of Shield Jaguar's conjuring on dozens of cushions, drinking a strong cacao brew that went straight to the brain. Gentle, fireless illumination from no obvious source glowed in the center of the hut. Sometime halfway into Shield Jaguar's long story of his life, the mysteries of the Mayan cosmos, and the dreadful challenges the world now faced, Dustin had thrown Ego at the door and snuggled like a child against Cliff's shoulder. He'd fought a momentary urge to push him away and lost. Screw that. He'd wrapped his arm around Dustin's slender waist and pulled him in closer, eliciting a soft sigh from him. It was bliss amidst their surreal situation. Cliff had lost count of how many times he'd indulged himself and brushed at Dustin's black hair, once or twice leaning in to press a kiss on his forehead. Shield Jaguar's voice, or rather, Cliff supposed, that of St. John Twain, mesmerized them both. He told the story of a universe, of good and evil, of mortals and gods, but mostly he spoke of the Dark Lords of Zabalba, how they had waited for many cycles of the great wheel of time for their ascendancy. In December of 2012, the door to hell opened, and they released a disease and a new epoch onto the mortal plane. Their plan, Shield Jaguar described, involved paring the human population to a manageable size, to throw the world into chaos and fear, and to enslave those who survived the wars they undertook without any prompting. For humans were by nature weak, and fear would drive them to attack each other. Those who ultimately rose to power would be the easiest to corrupt and enslave. The Dark Lords would rule unimpeded. Cliff had to admit the plan seemed to be working splendidly. If I believe you, and I'm not saying I do, what's the point of reaching out to us? Sounds like my unit should be scouting out an uninhabited island to live out our days. Dustin sat up and laughed. I thought that earlier, but I thought of a population of two. I believed so strongly that I would find honorable men and women that I gave up my immortality to find you. I gave up my wife, the loveliest woman in any world. Shield Jaguar propped his chin in his hands and stared at them, shifting his gaze from Cliff to Dustin and back again. You mean you're not a god anymore? Dustin asked. You can still do a lot of stuff. He indicated the magical Mayan hut. I had some skills as a god king that I retain. But yes, I will die with this body at, what, 90 or so? St. John Twain had a strong body, did he not? And a good appearance. He was my champion. Yes, you've said. I'm sure he was a great guy and all, or Tam wouldn't have married him. Tamara, yes. Cliff noticed a fleeting hint of concern on Shield Jaguar's face, but decided to let it be. They had enough to take in. So now we come to your part in this story. Dustin held Cliff's hand. I have the feeling we're not going to like this part. Probably not, Shield Jaguar agreed. It's the part where we have to do something crazy to save the world, right? Like defeat someone in a sword battle or find the One Ring. I'm a ballet dancer. My gut tells me that won't be very useful. Cliff laughed. You play too many video games. Dustin sniffed. You evidently don't read. You might find that your dance softens the heart and mystifies more than a sword. In any case, the road to Zabalba is rife with obstacles. You must cross a river filled with scorpions, a second filled with blood, and one of pus. Many roads beyond will confuse you, but if you choose correctly, you will find the Lords. You must not sit upon any seat offered you, for the surface will burn you to death. Am I being clear so far? Cliff pulled Dustin in for a hug, seeing him start to tremor. Dude, we're not crossing rivers of scorpions. Relax, he whispered. Kuchumakwik is the name of the Lord who released the death onto your kind. He is the Lord of gathering blood. Avoid him. Will do, Cliff nodded. Carry on. Once you cross into the city of Zabalba, and it is a large city. I thought it was a cave or something, Dustin asked. That is the entrance only. From there you find the dark house. You have not entered such blackness. That doesn't sound so bad. It is the blackness of all evil hearts, distilled into one place. It is not so bad, as you say. It is beyond bad. The cold house will freeze a mortal who is not prepared. I can prepare you for the Jaguar House, your third trial. They are hungry jaguars, so you must bring much raw meat. The bat house is rife with dangerous vampire bats. Vampire bats? Did you say vampire bats, as in vampires? Shield Jaguar frowned at the constant interruptions. Am I not speaking slowly and clearly enough for you, Private? Yes, vampire bats. The razor house is somewhat tricky, but with your skill of dance, you might outwit the blades and razors that move about of their own accord. I think I'll take what's behind the curtain instead, if it's all the same to you, Dustin said in hushed tones. It is not impossible to defeat the Dark Lords. Twin brothers, Hunapu and Zubalank, did so many years ago. They sealed the Lords in Zabalba. They must be sealed again,
All you must do is reach them, and they will be vanquished. Shield Jaguar shrugged, as if he'd said they should go to Home Depot and buy a hammer and nails. Cliff didn't know whether to laugh, cry, or punch the guy.
Why us? Dustin asked. I mean, you've had, like, forever to do this. Couldn't you have taken care of this as a good god before they basically destroyed our world?
That's a reasonable point. Shield Jaguar blew out a deep breath and brushed his fedora on his car keys. I suppose I was a bit too comfortable in my paradise with my Lady Aeok. I do offer my apologies. I did plead with the Dark Lords. You are the first good men I've encountered since reaching the mortal plane.
Terrific, Cliff answered.
I will accompany you as far as the cave entrance, get you across the rivers and down the circuitous paths. I cannot enter Zabalba, however. The lords would feel my presence, discover you, and destroy you immediately.
Double terrific. Dustin, we're not buying any of this, to be clear. You understand that?
Dustin looked up, his dark eyes dancing in the sourceless light.
I don't know what I believe. I mean, he healed me. He turned into a jaguar and back into a guy. Why couldn't the rest be true?
Cliff leaned back on the cushions.
Why indeed?
It didn't make less sense than anything else that had happened since last December.
Shield Jaguar stood abruptly and put on his hat. I will give you the night to decide. I cannot force you, for unless your hearts are devoted without intervention, you will fail. The fate of your kind is in your hands. Not to put undue pressure on you, of course.
Yeah, thanks for that, Cliff said.
Shield Jaguar extended both hands and chanted in a mysterious tongue, one that only vaguely resembled the few Mayan words Cliff had heard. He nodded, looked proud of himself. With all my power I have blessed you both and sealed this home from harm for one night. I will return at first light for your decision.
When he left, Dustin turned to Cliff.
Seriously, I get a night alone with you and we're supposed to spend it figuring out whether to save humanity? This totally sucks.
Cliff smiled despite the turmoil in his stomach and chest.
I don't think it has to be a total wash.
Shield Jaguar leaned against a tree trunk, musing on what the men would do. His thoughts inevitably turned to his own love, and tears followed. He heard a rustling in the brush and looked up to see Tamara Martin walking slowly in his direction. When he saw the spirit within the body, he cried out in amazement and ran to her.
My love, what have you done? You gave up your immortality?
Aeok bowed her head briefly and then kissed him.
It was a hollow life. How much more hollow would it have become through the ages?
Ah, bride, I have no words. Will you forgive me for leaving you?
I already have, or I would not be here. You were always a good king. I am now a good queen. Besides, is it not good to see your champions together again, at least in countenance?
Sinjin Twain and Tamara Martin would be pleased, yes.
Perhaps we will have a child, as they did.
Chapter 7.
Dustin stared into Cliff's eyes, waiting for any signal to move. Cliff had lain back on the cushions and stared at the roof of the hut for a good 5 minutes, silent. Now he looked into Dustin's eyes and smiled in a rueful way.
His name was Sam.
Dustin's heart caught in his throat. He didn't offer condolences or comment. He just nodded in silent thanks to Cliff for sharing that much.
I guess that would make this the worst time to kiss you?
Dustin studied his hands nervously.
I think it would be the best, Cliff said, pulling Dustin back to the cushions. The very best.
Dustin hovered a few inches above him, savoring the moment he'd never have again.
Who knows, he thought, maybe Cliff would be the last person he'd ever kiss, and for the wrong reasons. Maybe they'd die tomorrow. With a pang of fear and loss, he touched his lips to Cliff's and surrendered to Cliff's welcome assault. The stoic, repressed sergeant was long gone, replaced by a man hungry for love and sex. In silent agreement, they rolled so that their roles were more comfortable, Cliff above, taking charge. Thought fell away as they joined in a kiss that neither seemed to be willing to break. Cliff pulled up for breath and to look into Dustin's eyes. A momentary click of the gears of time stopped, Dustin's heart with it.
Oh no, I'm really in trouble here.
Sarge, he whispered with a smirk. You don't do this all the time, do you? What? Cliff propped himself up on an elbow and raised a brow. Kiss? Yeah, I do. I mean, when I'm dating or in a relationship, I do. But that's not what you meant, is it? Dustin shook his head and reached up to brush at Cliff's pale beard shadow. Then what? Oh, you mean, should we have the safe talk? Yes, absolutely. No, I mean, yes, we need that talk, but that's not what I meant. Then what? Because I'm dying here. You should be naked by now, damn it. Dustin pulled his sleeveless shirt off and glanced at Cliff for a reaction. I'm half naked all the time when I dance, but I feel really naked right now. Good. That means something, I think. Something good for me. Cliff pulled off his shirt and reached to clasp Dustin tight to his strong chest and shoulders. The contact sent Dustin's skin tingling. God, he murmured. Amen, Cliff answered, and reached to unzip Dustin's pants. They both wiggled out of their clothes within a few moments and sat facing one another. Kisses turned to caresses, and caresses turned to moans as they explored each other's muscled torsos. Now, he gasped as Dustin worked long, delicate fingers along his hardness. Now, we have to have the talk. Fast. I only have safe sex. How about you? Dustin took his answer away with a kiss. I really want to know how you feel. Please tell me something, Cliff. Yep. And I don't have anything with me that will keep that record. How about you? Me neither. Damn. Well, Private, your hands are magic. He leaned back and surrendered greedily for a moment and then sat up suddenly and pulled Dustin's hands away. Wait. Cliff caught his breath and kissed Dustin on the cheek and then pulled him into a strong embrace. His rapid breath sent chills through Dustin's body and made his blood pound. A nibble at Dustin's ear brought a half laugh and shudder. Cliff whispered as if the whole jungle would hear his words, as if his words were sacred to him. Your hands are magic. So is your face and your fucking amazing body. And your humor? I think you're magic, Private Huang. And God help me, you make me actually want to live a little longer. I don't know whether to hate you or love you for that. Dustin's words stuck in his throat. Love me for that. That was the conversation I really wanted to have. Unless we die tomorrow, this isn't a one-night stand, at least for me. Is that what you needed to hear? Dustin nodded, ashamed at the need in his heart for this man. I'm acting like a freaking schoolboy. You're perfect. Now shut up and kiss me again, and use those hands. As the first pale pinpricks of light broke through the hut ceiling, Cliff cursed silently and looked at Dustin, curled against his shoulders, hair mussed, looking more beautiful than any man had a right to. He'd known Sam inside and out for 3 years. He'd known Dustin for 3 months. How could the connection to this near stranger be so strong? Maybe their circumstances, he mused. Cliff knew the difference between lust and love, and he balanced now on a pleasant fence between the two. Another day and night of shared stories and secrets, shared ecstasy, and he'd fall off that fence. Dustin had fallen. He'd seen the precise moment it had happened in his eyes. Perhaps Cliff had some catching up to do, only because Sam's ghost hovered always an inch away. Dustin seemed to feel his stare and opened his eyes with a groan. He nestled again against Cliff and pulled a thin, hand-woven Mayan wrap over his face. Make it go away. Cliff laughed. What? Everything that isn't last night. I don't think we'll be able to make Shield Jaguar go away. He's probably the type of ancient Mayan god who's good to his word. Dustin sat up and ran his hand through his hair. Did we decide what we're going to do? I don't remember anything but sex. Yeah, we decided. We decided we'd rather join the unit, go home, and forget about scorpion rivers and rooms full of razors. We decided we wanted to be together, for one. You did? I mean, I did, but you did too? Shit, I'm pathetic. You're really pathetic. Mr. Jaguar will have to find another mortal pair to tell his fairy story to. I believed him. You didn't believe him? Dustin pulled on his pants and threw Cliff's at him. I don't believe we can stop the virus with voodoo. It's pretty much played out anyway. This whole mission is to ensure they can deal with a mutation if one occurs. Our chances of finding the original source are slim to none. Everyone says it's most likely in Africa. Except Shield Jaguar said. Cliff raised a brow and Dustin stopped cold. They finished dressing in silence and sat back down. Dustin rubbed at his thigh at a phantom injury healed by a Mayan god. Cliff knew they'd be at odds and prayed it wouldn't come between them. Dustin, I'm not in charge right now. I'm your, whatever it is you want to call me, almost boyfriend. Dustin smirked. You're in charge in all the ways that count. No, I'm not. I want you to think this through. Do you really believe that we can stop a bunch of demon guys, ones that may or may not exist, from taking over the world? The West is already fairly stable. We're coming back from the death. You and I, we're not going to speed that up or slow it down. How do you know? Maybe it will get worse if we don't try. Maybe they will kill everyone. I'm not willing to risk my life to find out. Are you? Isn't it just as likely that we'll get back to Jersey, wait out our tours of duty, whatever? I'll do construction and you can dance. Doesn't that sound better than letting a stranger lead us around this jungle? We don't know him. Yeah, he's definitely not human, but we don't know we can trust him. Dustin sighed and reached for Cliff's hand. Well, it seems it has got to be both of us. If you're not willing, we're not going. We'll tell our friend that we're settled on our decision. Cliff, let's get something straight. You're my CO in more ways than one, okay, I get that. There's no sense in pretending it's not like that. This, he gestured to the space between them. You're holding the cards here, too. I get that. You get that. But don't call it our decision. I'm entitled to that much. It's your decision. Wow. Cliff rubbed at his scalp and felt a flush of shame creep up his neck. Yeah. You sounded just like Sam then. Then I think I like Sam. Cliff wanted to yell, wanted to protest, but Dustin held firm in a way Sam never had. Arms crossed his chest, chin jutted out just a bit. He nodded. Yep, got it. They swirled around as the sunlight streamed in the doorway, silhouetting the god in Sin Jin Twain's body. Trouble in paradise? Something like that, Cliff growled. Actually, no, it was paradise for a night. It still is. I have decided to refuse your mission. The private here is more simpatico, but neither of us is going with you. Shield Jaguar put his hat on and took a few strides into the hut. The smell of burnt wood and cacao followed him. And you are ready to live with the consequences? Watch the Dark Lords rule over your kind, scorch the land that isn't already destroyed, enslave those who survived? In a word, yes, we're willing to take the chance. Dustin turned and faced Cliff. His teeth were clenched so tightly his jaw muscles moved. Would it hurt to just follow him for a while? Just to the first trial or whatever it is? To assure ourselves it's a crock of shit? Seriously, Cliff, the world and everyone in it. How would we live with that if he's telling the truth? How have we lived through the death? We'd do the same thing we've been doing. Nothing. In a flash, it hit Cliff that he'd already died with Sam and every third person on the planet. He'd given up, taken on the cloak of a soldier, but lived as a coward. He stared into the eyes of a real soldier, a man who had no training, no business taking on anything but a part in a ballet. A hero. Someone who wanted to live, because life was once good, and maybe it would be good again. His heart lurched, and he had to choke back a tear. I'm not sure I deserve to be your boyfriend. You're a better man. Dustin's eyes grew wide and misty. All right, my magic fairy lover and magic Mayan god, one day. Can you get us to the first horrific trial in one day? Shield Jaguar smiled. I believe Lady Aok will be pleased. I have once again brought lovers together, and I have once again found a hero among mortals. He leaned into Dustin and whispered loud enough for Cliff to hear. He'll catch up in time. Heroes don't disappoint the ones they love. The end.
Thanks for letting me share this, Kia. It's very much appreciated. I thought this was both an interesting and exciting tale, no matter the genders involved in the romance. This will be the final podcast for this season of RomPod. There will be a short break to allow me to replenish my cache of stories and also to return my voice to good health as it has been failing me recently. That's it from me for now. I've been your host, Amanda McCall. Thank you for joining me, and hopefully we'll be back very soon with another story for you to enjoy. Special thanks to my husband, Simon. Please remember, whenever you can, share the love. This podcast is shared under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. You may distribute, display, and copy this work, but not for commercial use. You may not alter, transform, or build upon this work in any way, and if you use it, you must link to the original work. The stories within each episode remain copyright of the authors. RomPod is created using the Audacity editing software. The music used in each episode is sampled from Tango di Manzana by Kevin MacLeod. Find his work on incompetech.com.